can catch up with the show, podcasts, show clips, listen live wherever you go. Never be away from Justice and Drew. Plus, take advantage of all the amazing features, especially when it comes to the playlists and the curated playlists on the iHeartRadio app. It's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, I use it every day. What was the latest station that I've been listening to out on the deck? It's Three Dog Night. Built a station around Three Dog Night.
You did now, did you?
Fantastic. They're an underrated band.
I don't think that I could name a single Three Dog Night song.
Yeah, you know, Jeremiah Was a Bullfrog.
Oh, okay, I know that one.
Yeah, everybody knows that one.
Yeah, I know. I just didn't know that was Three Dog. That was Three Dog Night.
They're one of those bands that you don't realize how many of their songs you know.
Right.
You know, but they until you actually see them and hear them. And
that happened with ELO and Melinda. She used the iHeartRadio app and made an ELO channel. I didn't know that she was into Electric Light Orchestra, and then
they were good.
And then I didn't realize how many songs were from ELO.
Like Supertramp's the same way.
Yeah.
Good band that doesn't get enough credit because you hear their song and you don't realize it's Supertramp.
Melinda corrected me yesterday because I threw in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and I thought the opening song that Mr. Blue, I thought it was the Beatles. And she goes, it's ELO. I'm like, what?
That's funny.
That was melodic, and it sounded 60s, 70s-ish.
I can hear that particular song. I can hear it.
Sounds Beatles-esque.
The harmonies.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. At least I didn't say it was a Beatles. I didn't thought it was the Beach Boys.
I thought it was AC/DC. Joining us now, enough of that silliness, Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka. Good morning, sir.
Hey, good morning. I like a little bit of that silliness, especially if it's from the 70s.
Right? Right? You sound like the kind of guy that's into some Three Dog Night.
Well, Three Dog Night, Lynyrd Skynyrd was back then. Supertramp was great.
Yeah.
Plus, I like the Southern rock of that era as well.
Yeah, same. I that's what I grew up on. That's the music that I grew up on. I really enjoy it. So, lots going on. It's been some busy times there in the Senate. Let's start off with the status of the Senate version of tax conformity. The House yesterday passed their tax plan. Passed it with what I understand to be a veto-proof majority. So, where do things stand in the Senate, and do you expect major differences coming out of the Senate in regards to the House bill?
Well, you know, we always save the best for last. So, I mean, here comes the Senate.
I'm sure your House colleagues would agree with you.
The House might disagree, but we're gonna provide more money towards basically conforming and tax relief, which means we're gonna be able to do a little bit more. I think one of the big things that we set out to do was to make sure next to nobody got impacted in Minnesota by the federal tax bill. The federal tax bill, keep in mind, about 90% got a tax reduction, but because Minnesota is a high-tax state, if we weren't careful, Minnesotans were going to get a tax increase. So that's the biggest thing that's going to happen is virtually no one gets a tax increase.
Because currently, and feel free to correct us if we're wrong, but looking at the Star Tribune story, as it stands in the House version, you still have a small number of Minnesotans, about 148,000, that would see a tax increase with the plan's elimination of some deductions. Does that remaining, or are we trying to whittle that down even further?
No, we're going to be down under, I don't know, steal all the thunder, but just into the thousands, not tens of thousands. Under Senator Chamberlain's plan, I mean, he took a long time to do this because that was one of the things he wanted to make sure that we figured out a way to do. And lo and behold, he's got it done.
I know education reform has been something you guys have been very busy on. There's a press conference later today to unveil. That's the tax bill that's being unveiled today. But the education policy bill is on the floor today. Talk about some of the policy provisions that are going to be in this bill.
You know, we did a review of it yesterday, but to be honest, I was out working on some other issues, so I don't have all the details of that coming forward. If I can come back to the tax bill, though, that's the one we're doing the press conference on today. One of the issues that we were concerned about is holding the business community harmless on the tax bill while trying to give some tax relief to the individuals. And that was the really, really tough part that took a while to get it done. But that was the other thing that Senator Chamberlain did is didn't raise taxes on the business community while actually addressing lowering tax brackets for the individual. So, and that is the press conference that's coming out. That you're actually the first to hear, your radio audience, the first to hear some of the things that we're actually doing on that bill.
What kind of support is it? Do you believe it's going to have? I know with the House vote, you had a 90-38 backing the plan. 13 DFL lawmakers actually joined every Republican in supporting it. What are you currently looking at?
You know, they haven't said, but I will tell you that the tax committee, the Democrats that are on that committee, are, as a group, fairly reasonable, and we have worked. I've been on that committee for a number of years, and get that good tax policy is good for Minnesota. So that's where we'll have to first see. So we're going to talk about the bill today. We're actually going to pass it out of committee tomorrow. And if you see some votes there, then I would expect a number of votes on the floor. And like I said, because virtually no individuals get tax increases, and in fact, a bunch get a tax decrease, I've got to believe they'll be supportive.
Do you feel like that you're able to avoid some of the bias that just relates to party politics because of the fact that you have to conform at the federal level? I mean, almost to the extent of this didn't happen at the local level. You've got to make it align with what happened at the federal level. Does that provide the opportunity to bring along some support that you normally wouldn't get when the party politics and the bias end up getting into the mix?
Yes, I think that's true, and it's also important from our part, you know, that we recognize that we're not going to get as much done as we would like, because we know that we really need to do conformity if at all possible. Otherwise, it's just a nightmare for people to do their tax returns next year. And so,
yeah,
you know, the governor's plan was okay. The House plan was good. And the Senate plan is, like I said, you know, that's great. It's the best one. So I think we should just adopt ours and we'll get out of here early.
What do you expect? What kind of objections or pushback do you expect, if any, from the governor's office when the plans come together? I mean, how far apart are you guys?
Well, one of the things the governor does, there wasn't really a lot of tax decrease for the individual on his plan, but there was definitely tax increase on the business community, like $250 million or more. And that's, you know, that's just problematic. We're already one of the top tax business states, as well as one of the top tax individual states. And so our goal is not to pass on one from the other. It was to basically try to keep them both neutral and, if at all possible, reduce the individual. And this is a little tweet I put out about a week ago, but it's basically 23 states, their highest tax bracket is, or their, how to make sure I get this right, their tax brackets, their smallest ones, their biggest ones are I got it all screwed up. I can't figure it out. You know, but basically, there's 23 states that have tax brackets that are, their lowest ones are higher than our highest one. And so how do we change some of that to make sure that we get more competitive with the rest of the states? And that's individual taxes, that's corporate taxes, it's sales taxes, it's property taxes. And so, but this one, this year is basically, let's just conform and keep aiming towards that goal of lower taxes.
Talking with Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka, you sound, and this is just observation, you sound more confident. Maybe confidence is not the right word, but, you know, we have this May 21st deadline approaching. You mentioned a moment ago, maybe get out of there early, but you sound more excited than you have in previous weeks over the opportunities here. Is that a fair assessment? Is that a fair perception?
Well, it is, because things have started to break through last week. It was basically, there was just a lot of really difficult things that we had to hurdle over and figure out, and it feels like we're there. You know, the tax bill's coming forward. We got the small spending bill off the floor, which was, you know, I knew that was going to be a little dicey because we had some reforms that some people didn't want, and, you know, how are we going to get that one done? The infrastructure bill, I think most people have decided that we're probably going to do one. So basically everything's moving forward, and then you have a governor that you know, I think he wants to be done as well. I think he's served his 8 years. Anybody that does this job, I think at the end they probably get a, you know, the place where they just want to be done. And so we're going to help them do that and, you know, aim towards the right and see where we land.
We offered the governor a deal yesterday on the show.
Yeah. You
know, seeing as how he is wrapping up the end of his term, he's not running again. He was listed as like the 11th richest politician in the world with family net worth. We said, you know what? Just don't do anything, Governor Dayton. And if you agree to those terms, we will do nothing but say nice things about you.
Yeah, yeah. If he can lame duck it for the rest of the year,
the best lame duck.
It'd be fantastic.
Well, when I had tweeted out that our lowest tax bracket was higher than 23 other states, somebody said to me, "Well, I like all the spending we have in our state." And I was thinking, well, we could create a box on the tax form that if you want to give money,
yeah,
because you want to be a high tax state, then you can do that.
Yeah,
that would be the fairest thing to do.
That's a fantastic idea.
Yeah. Make it voluntary. I like it.
Hey, one more quick question before we let you go. Just out of pure curiosity. So, do you have any kind of tradition, like when you finish up a session and you feel like it's been successful, you know, and you've wrapped it up, you go home, you know, put on some Three Dog Night, and do you have like? Because I know, like, after a good week of shows, I use it as an excuse. You know, I'm gonna crack out a bottle of wine, and
it just so happens that every week is a good week.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if you have any kind of tradition at the end of session to celebrate.
You know, before the Capitol remodel, there was a number of folks that would go up to the Golden Horses and either have a cigar or just be up there and hang out. And since then, I don't know that any tradition has been brought back, but that is a great reminder. You know, I mean, that's not to say we don't go out and celebrate, some more than others.
Sure.
Just to be done. But it's a real relief when you finish, because typically it's late at night. I don't know why it's always late at night. But you're just exhausted because there's so many people pulling at you at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, can you do this last thing? But you hear that maybe 100 or 1,000 times. And every senator, every legislator get that. You know, and then somehow you navigate to the end with the governor and you finally get it done. And it's a real relief. Last year was probably the most productive session we've ever had in a long, long time, with tax relief, transportation, real ID, education reform, and more. I didn't think we'd have anything to do this year, and yet now we've got, you know, the safe schools that we want to try to work through and senior abuse that we want to try to correct, NLARS, tax bill, bonding. I never dreamed that it would be this busy this year.
Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka, always a pleasure. Enjoy our Tuesday chats, and have a great, productive week, and we look forward to catching up with you again next week.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Have a good day.
Take care.
You know, there's a story out of Channel 5. Amazon is going to be adding 200 high-tech jobs here in Minneapolis. They signed a lease to move into a 103,000 square foot office in the T3 building in Minneapolis North Loop. This sticks out in light of the conversation we were having with Paul Gazelka, just because when it comes to making sure we get this tax code aligned and we've got a good tax policy here in Minnesota, it's important for stuff like this. Even though we didn't get the headquarters, they're still investing. You look at Amazon stated it's created more than 2,000 full-time jobs in Minnesota and invested already $400 million in the state since 2015.
I go play cards down at Canterbury, every so often, and I always drive by that Amazon plant that mm-hmm. that place is massive. It's done wonders for that area.
Ari Silke, the general manager of Amazon's Minneapolis office, said that we found a phenomenal talent here and look forward to growing our team in our new office in a vibrant North Loop neighborhood. I wonder how they would feel about the Bernie Sanders Jobs for All plan. I wonder if that was...
I wonder how much Bernie's counting on Amazon.
Yeah.
Like, no, they'll hire everybody. Don't worry. It's all good.
200 high-tech gigs, man. I mean, these are jobs that are going to be around for a long, long time.
Yep, that's fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah, learn those skills, man. Learn those skills.
Coming up, a lengthy piece out of NPR about Minneapolis City Council President Lisa Bender. It's decidedly anti-car,
But there's a little gem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That they bury, like, right at the end.
Very, very end of the article.
Yeah, you got it. You got to hear the nonsense coming out of this.
She's so much more important than anybody else, than all of us.
Absolutely.
She's just, she's very, very important. That's the entire gist of the piece. Plus, we've got Jason Flores from Americans for Prosperity joining us just after the bottom of the hour.
Your shot at $1,000 now. Text the keyword Bills to 200-200. You'll get a text confirming entry plus iHeartRadio info. Standard data and message rates apply. That's Bills to 200-200.
I'm Chris Addison. Here's a look at the roads being brought to you by unbound.org. Some debris on the roadway. This sounds like
30 and 103.5 FM. Reminder, use the hashtag TCNT on Twitter. You want to communicate with us at any time. We do monitor that hashtag throughout the show. You can follow me at Andrew Lee TCNT. You can follow John at John Justice. You can follow Sam at Sam Sansevier.
We have a couple of stories.
She tweets sometimes.
On occasion. One, Minneapolis is moving towards sustainability with 100% renewable electricity plan.
If no, they're not.
Time permitting, we'll get into that. Probably not till...
That's a lie.
Later in the show. However, this one here kind of falls into a similar category, so we'll put it under an appropriate sort of gone green update.
It's not easy being green.
No.
Having to spend each day the color of the leaves.
Because I kind of equate being green, this sort of this anti-car mentality as being green.
Oh,
right? You're just stemming from that, right?
Absolutely.
This lengthy piece here, I mean, look, it was four pages after a cut and paste removal of all the photographs and a shrinking of the font. So it was actually much larger than that. More homes, more bikes, fewer cars. City Council President looks to rebuild Minneapolis.
There's so much nonsense in here.
I know.
It's not even
so
funny.
Much utopian, centralized planning nonsense garbage coming out of the city council.
Minneapolis City Council President Lisa Bender got her start in politics in 2009, lobbying for the city for more bike lanes. Now she's leading the city's effort to make over the zoning laws that dictate what does and doesn't get built.
Yeah, they have to meet Lisa's approval.
Right.
Hey, there seems to be a great deal of consumer demand for a coffee shop here. Lisa, what do you think? No! I don't want a coffee shop there.
Her vision is a denser, you know, more walkable neighborhoods, fewer single-family homes, fewer cars. That's a big, big portion of this whole lengthy piece.
That's the main thing here.
Yeah, you move down through it. Bender moved to the Twin Cities in 2009 after working in the New York City on transit issues, getting her master's degree in urban planning, working in San Francisco. Blah, 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 blah. Everywhere she went in the Twin Cities, when she returned, she saw a problem with the way the streets were designed.
Yeah, they were designed for cars.
I know, the statement.
They were designed for cars. That's what streets are for.
Her statement says this. It was all about moving cars through neighborhoods quickly, and the result of that was that cars moved through neighborhoods quickly. And...
So they worked.
Make it unsafe for people.
So they worked. They were effective in their intent.
So let me follow the...
So she had to come in and change it all.
Let me follow the logic here just real quick on that statement. Okay, so she admits, right, the streets were designed to move the automobiles through quickly, and the result is the automobiles move quickly, but it makes it unsafe for people. Okay, you're still going to have cars, right? So your logic is to make it so that the cars can't move as quickly through the neighborhoods, in which case you're actually increasing the length of time that a car is actually in the neighborhood. Now, I don't know how what accounting for speed here she is discussing, but a car is a car is a car. And if it makes a connection with somebody, it's going to hurt at 15, at 20, at 30 miles an hour.
That person is going to be on the losing end of that transaction.
Yeah, we'll make it harder for them to move through the neighborhoods. What you want is you want the cars out of the neighborhoods altogether. That's what you really want.
Yeah, she wants people out of their cars. So she founded an advocacy group called the Minneapolis Bicycle Coalition, now called Our Streets Minneapolis, to pressure the city council to design streets with bicyclists and pedestrians in mind, yet the people in the cars are the ones that are paying for those streets.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. It's such a and the thing of it is for people like, in my opinion, for people like Minneapolis City Council President Lisa Bender, this is like a religion for them.
Oh yeah, it absolutely is.
And it certainly is one that you can't argue against, specifically calling it that, because you can't really argue with somebody when it comes to their religion, when it comes to their belief, when it comes to their faith. These are things that people believe deep down to their core. So to have any kind of sensible argument or try to rationalize with an individual, it's not going to happen because that person is deeply rooted in what they believe, and this is how they treat these issues.
She's quoted in the story saying an engineer used to look at a street and say, okay, we need 4 lanes of traffic and these lanes have to move cars. Now we say, this is our bike plan. It's on a transit corridor. We need to have 15 feet of sidewalk space. We need to have a bike lane. And then we'll see what space is left for cars.
As a council member, as she championed the complete streets policy. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Bike lanes have not been universally celebrated in Minneapolis. When Bender ran for re-election in 2017, someone distributed flyers throughout her ward warning that her bike lanes would kill the area on Nicollet Avenue known as Eat Street because there wouldn't be anywhere to park. Yeah. But she won re-election last fall with even more votes than before.
Yeah, and talk to the restaurants in that area and see how that's worked out.
By the way, did they try to equate that she won because of the issue? Is that why they... That's like a bold assumption there.
That's sort of the assumption that they want you to walk away with, but they don't talk about, you know, what the flyers alleged and what has happened since then. How many restaurants have closed in Minneapolis?
Right.
And, you know, how many, I mean, whenever we talk about parking in downtown Minneapolis, our phones light up on this show with people who say, you know, I used to go down there all the time. I don't go down there anymore. I get emails all the time. Used to go down there all the time. Now it's just too difficult. It's too difficult to get in, too difficult to get out. Can't find a place to park. I've tried to go to Twins games before and had tickets to Twins games before and ended up leaving and not going to the game because I could not find a place to park. That's ridiculous for any sort of downtown area to be dealing with that kind of problem. To turn people away who want to come down there from the suburbs, from the outer areas, and spend money at your restaurants and at your bars and at your Target Field and watch your Twins, and then they just turn around and go home because they can't find a place to park.
Well, and what's so frustrating with all this is that there's no need for proof of concept here. Right. There's no need to try to produce numbers of the individuals who want to go to a particular location, say in the Minneapolis, you know, the downtown Minneapolis area, and they want to go there on their bike. Right. Their whole mentality is, you know, if we change it, then people will go and change their behaviors. There isn't this massive demand from a whole bunch of individuals who have bicycles sitting in their garage. You're like, well, I would only ride my bike downtown if only they made it more feasible. It's just not the case. And they don't have to argue that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessary because they've been arguing this way for so long that there's no need to justify what it is they want to do if they're saying what we want to do and what I want to do is really best for the community, and it really is right. Best for everybody, and when we change it, everybody's behaviors will change as well.
They do talk about some of her critics and some residents, especially in the uptown area, that are really concerned about the decrease in parking. But then later in the article, it's Bender takes the criticism in stride. Translation: Bender don't care.
No.
Bender don't care. Her opinion is that the city needs to allow for more types of housing, including micro apartments, in order to ease the housing shortage. They talk about this development that's going on in Uptown, where it'll have 323 parking spaces, but the people in the area say that's not enough. Bender don't care.
No. And it says here, too, when it comes to the parking ramp issue, during Bender's first term, housing, and especially affordable housing, became increasingly hard to come by. Bender and her pro-density allies looked to cars as part of the problem. Specifically, they looked to a city policy that mandated the new parking spaces for new developments. Now they've led to efforts to ease those parking requirements, right? So we don't need as many parking spaces. Yeah. You know, because we're going to force as many cars out of downtown as humanly possible.
So this woman, Lisa Bender, city council president, has launched her entire political career on an anti-car, you know, crusade, getting people out of their cars, making it more difficult for cars to get around in the area. Buried way down at the very end of the article. the last little snippets in the article for Lisa Bender. This is on page 4. Nobody reads this far. For Lisa Bender, the future might not be coming quickly enough. She recently, reluctantly, bought her own car. She said, now that I'm council president, I need to be in a lot of different parts of the city very quickly. And it wasn't working so well to try to bike or take Lyft or whatever. So she's so important that she has to have a car. And she has to navigate, you know, this bike lane hell that she's helped create in Minneapolis. But for everybody else, I'm sure they can get by without one.
And if it wouldn't have been for the fact that NPR totally goes and aligns themselves and believes in what that Lisa Bender is fighting for, that should have been the focal point. The focal point of this entire ridiculous puff piece should have been that city council member Lisa Bender doesn't practice what she preaches.
Yeah.
That's what the whole, it should have been. She's a complete hypocrite. Oh, you know, it was hard, you know, try to get around a bike or a Lyft or whatever. Right. It completely negates all these efforts and what she's been trying to do the whole time. That should have been the focus.
Perfect example of someone who wants to use city government to try to engineer not just an area, but people's lives. Engineer the choices that they make. Engineer the way they live, but cannot be bothered to live by those same standards themselves.
Nope, of course not.
Not for them.
Of course not.
No, you know, they're the elite. They're the ones in charge. You know, the rules are different. She's very busy. She's got to get around the city. What, you don't think that there's thousands of people with jobs out there that require them to be around the city as much or more than you, Lisa Bender?
She's going to push so many cars out of downtown that hers, you know, her addition to it won't matter. 651-989-5855. We'll get to your phone calls coming up. Also, from Americans for Prosperity, Jason Flores is going to be joining us in studio. We'll get his thoughts on the House version of the tax bill, expecting the Senate to go and release their version coming up just after 10 o'clock this morning. And it's all coming up on Twin Cities News Talk.
Justice and Drew.
I think I'd do well in prison.
Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
Hey, it's Justice and Drew. And look, a very special day for your mom is right around the corner. And you want to make sure that you make your mom happy, right? Right. And moms have kind of low expectations when it
FM. Welcome back to your Tuesday edition of Justice and Drew. Pleased to be joined by Jason Flores from Americans for Prosperity. Good morning.
Morning, guys.
A little bit later on, time permitting, we'll get into this. And the editorial board of the Star Tribune, feds shouldn't interfere with Metropolitan Council. Let Minnesotans decide whether and how to elect council members. Yeah, we'll get into the details of this a little bit later on. But it really comes down to, I shouldn't do that.
I've got words.
Shouldn't do that.
I've got words. Feds. The headline is, feds shouldn't interfere with the Metropolitan Council. The feds are the only reason we have a Metropolitan Council. Spoiler alert. We left off, and we're going to talk tax conformity and the House, Senate, and Governor Dayton's plans with Jason Flores in just a moment. But we did leave off talking about City Council President Lisa Bender, who's so important now that she needs to have a car, but everyone else should be using a bike, honestly, even in February.
Yeah, she put herself in the office basically being the champion of fewer cars, more bike lanes, wider sidewalks, and then finally, well, I reluctantly had to get a car because, you know, Lyft and a bike wasn't really working out for me.
I don't know if you guys know this, but I'm kind of a big deal. I'm Lisa Bender.
I want to know what she bought.
I'm Lisa Bender.
That's what I want to know. I want to know what she drives.
Got a few people that want to chime in on that, so we want to get these calls. Let's start with Joe in Waseca. Good morning, Joe.
Hey, good morning, guys. You want to get rid of these 19th century trinkets? The best thing to do would be to give them a $50 to $100 license fee and require them to have insurance on every single bicycle.
Oh, they'd go away real quick. You talk about an uprising of spandex you've never seen before if you tried to propose that.
You think we could actually pull that off, though, registering and licensing?
Spandex? Yes.
No, bicycles.
No.
I mean, we can't even have a registration system for vehicles in this state. Right. Now you want to extend that same broken system. You'll have to wait years to get your bicycle. You wouldn't be able to ride your bike for years while you're waiting.
Well,
tabs are expired.
And I get where that stems from, and we hear it over and over again, but just real quick on that note, it's not a viable option. question because it's not just the individuals on the road bikes and the spandex that are out cycling, you know? It's dudes like me who go out for an hour, but also drive my car to work every day. It's my sons, you know? So I know when that gets, and I know that gets brought up in jest, but a lot, oftentimes it gets brought up seriously, but this whole registering bikes just is, it's not feasible.
Let's go to Jeff in Cokato. Good morning, Jeff.
At least they'd have some skin in the game for paying for the road.
Right.
We can dream, can't we?
But I'm not, why do I have to get double dinged then if I ride my bike every day?
Don't have as many kids and don't buy them as many toys.
No, it's I ride my bike, Jeff.
I know.
Jeez.
The point of my call was, I think Lisa Bender bought a car, or one of the points was, I think she bought a car because she kept getting mistaken as Elvira Gulch whenever she rode her bike around town.
That was a call.
I don't get the reference, Jeff.
I'm not done yet.
No. I think you need to be done, Jeff.
No, Jeff, you're done.
Yeah, Jeff.
You're done.
Yeah. Producer Sam has decreed.
That's not how this works.
All right.
And one more quick point on this. You know, this is about getting people out of their cars. I mean, that is definitely part of the motivation. But the motivation behind that, it's all about getting off of oil. This is more about oil than it is about anything else. They want to end oil. They want to go to all wind, solar, things like that. The problem is, you know, with all these people in their cars, you know, they're using gas, they're using petroleum. You know, we can never really get off oil until we get people out of their cars.
Yeah, and the propaganda game is strong. My 11-year-old came home the other day and we were talking about something. I don't know how it popped up, and he certainly didn't hear it from me. Out of nowhere, he's like, "Well, you know, Dad, one of these days when people just stop driving their cars around, you know, and we're not driving so many automobiles on the roads, the planet will be in better shape." And I just went, "Oh, son, you've now stepped in it."
my kids don't fall for it because they play hockey, and they're like, "We can't carry our hockey bags right on them." Bike
right.
In January.
Right.
I don't even want to do that in the summer. I suggest taking the bus. We're right off the main, you know, bus line in St. Paul. Like, you could just do that. You want me to drag my hockey bag on a bus?
Yeah, and Lisa Bender does not want families moving to Minneapolis. She's got this vision that it's all going to be these, you know, single 20-somethings, and that's what's going to populate Minneapolis in perpetuity.
Well, and to her point about trying to get around town, I mean, that's the problem that every family faces, is you've got this after-school activity here, you've got hockey, and then you're back, and then you're in work, you're at, you know, wherever you want to go late. You simply can't do it, even in the system that we have now, or more bike lanes. It's not going to get families where they need to go on time ever.
But Lisa Bender don't care.
Apparently not.
Star Tribune, Jason Flores joins us in studio, Americans for Prosperity. Minnesota House passed a tax plan that would lower rates for most. I know that we're going to have a, right around 10:15, the Senate will unveil their version, which will be different than the House version. Where are your thoughts on this right now? I know that in the story it says there's a small number as it rests with this House version of 148,000, the latest estimate, that would see a tax increase while everybody else wouldn't. Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka said they're going to be whittling that down considerably. How is this thing going to shake out? Are you excited? Are you trepidatious? Where's your head at?
No, I'm pretty excited about it because following on the heels of federal tax reform, which I mean, you talked about on the show before, and we've seen across the country has done a lot of good things for the country in businesses, bringing money back, reinvesting in workers, bonuses, raising wages, create new jobs, all these good things that tax bill is doing. If Minnesota didn't take these steps to, in legislative speak, it's tax conformity. What it really is making sure you get the benefits that you're supposed to be getting, even though you live in a high tax state. So we had some challenges in that regard, and that's why you see some changes in the tax bill that are very technical in nature. But on top of that, then, the legislature was also able to provide significant tax relief for individuals and for companies here in Minnesota to even extend upon those benefits from federal tax reform. So I'm excited to see that. I think both the House and the Senate bills, they're going to be similar. And I think at the end of the day in conference committee, they're going to take the best ideas from both and come up with an even better bill. The challenge is going to be then getting it past the governor. Even though the House bill had some bipartisan support, I would guess that the Senate bill is going to have some, but not as much. Because remember, they're not up for election this year. Some of these House members are, and they know, they can see the math. They see all these stories about what tax reform does. They don't want to be that vote on that tax bill that they know people are going to call out over the course of the summer and in this election cycle and say, well, tax reform is good and it's giving me more money in my paycheck. My company's expanding. They're creating more jobs. But you voted against doing that here in Minnesota? That's why you saw this bipartisan support for this tax bill. So I think it'll be there. I don't think the Senate vote will be as bipartisan, but I think it will also be a very good bill that Senator Chamberlain unveils today.
Given it's, as you mentioned, it's got to get past Governor Mark Dayton, how small is that box that the GOP has to work in to craft something substantial that will also get signed off on by the governor?
It's small, and that's part of why you see in this bill, like, look, these are good bills that are passed by the House and Senate. No question about it. They go the right direction. They give rate reductions to individuals. This will be the first time, I think the news article called this out, this will be the first time in something like 20 years right. that a rate in Minnesota, one of those rate classes, is actually going to drop. That is a good thing and a big thing. I wish we'd do it more across the board and go bigger to send a message to this country. Hey, we've been high tax, ridiculously high tax for a long time, fourth highest in the nation, but let's take one more step. We're going to start fighting against that. That would send a great message to people who want to locate here, businesses that want to expand here, that we have folks in this state who are serious about actually putting us on the right track in tax reform.
That almost seems like... We talked with Paul Gazelka quite a bit about the length of this session and how it's kind of been shortened a bit. That almost, and it's, you know, hindsight's 2020, but it almost feels like I wish we had more time to begin to sort of to argue that point. We've had a couple of articles, one from CNBC talking about 800,000 people are going to flee New York and California because of taxes. You've got, you know, things happening in California as well. They serve as very good examples of exactly what you're saying. You could use these points to argue about doing something that's even more broad than what they're suggesting, but I just don't think we have the time.
Well, I wouldn't even worry so much about the time. I think that the time could be done. It's the fact that the governor won't allow it. I mean, look, you have a governor here who you may convince him to sign this bill based on the merits of tax conformity, on the simplification, the breaking us away from some of the things in the past with the federal tax code that need to be changed. Right. So that filing isn't ridiculous. But this governor in no way, shape or form is concerned with or supportive of tax relief. He's done everything that he can during his administration to suck every dollar out of businesses, out of new higher taxes. He's opposed even changes that would get rid of automatic inflators. No, he wants those automatic inflators because he needs every single dollar coming into the state to feed the high tax, high spend mentality that his budget calls for.
It's a point of pride for him.
Absolutely.
He wears the high tax state badge with honor. I mean, he's proud of it. He's bragged about it. He considers it to be high taxed, high services. It's because he doesn't have to register his own tabs.
Yeah.
You know, it's because he doesn't have to deal with Minsure. He doesn't have to deal with Minlars. He doesn't have to deal with the subpar services that a lot of Minnesotans are dealing with and are struggling with. Those don't affect him. In his world, yeah, we're going to tax the crap out of you because we're going to provide all of these great services. Well, and doesn't matter to him whether or not they don't work.
He's got this idea that the state government is the state. And that's so completely not true.
Yeah.
He thinks that if, you know, he talks about fiscal responsibility. Well, just because the ridiculous level of taxes that he imposed in the 2013 session with full control of the legislature, he thinks that the couple of surpluses that have been run since, based on those taxes, not based on economic activity, not based on GDP growth, not based on job growth, because we've been lagging the nation in those things, just because he's taxed people enough that the state stays in black, he thinks that's fiscal responsibility.
Yeah, he thinks that's a sign of a healthy state, is having massive surpluses. Whereas for me, I see massive surpluses and I say, we're overtaxed.
It's a sign that you're taking so much money out of the economy. Look, Minnesota isn't going to be bargain basement state anytime soon.
No.
And I don't think the people of the state will ever decide that. But we're spending, I mean, we're double-digit increases in spending every year. No family, no other business is doing that. We're spending 150% more, 1.5 times as much money as we did on day one of Governor Dayton's administration, and he still wants more. His tax plan that he put out is nothing more than a tax increase on every Minnesotan, and according to his very own Department of Revenue, is a regressive tax increase. It's going to hit the people that can least afford it the most. So I don't know how he can countenance talking about either fiscal stability or tax relief in the same sentence as bills like the House and Senate have that actually provide some kind of relief.
Because he's Governor Dayton, and he doesn't have to be consistent.
Governor Dayton don't care.
I think the problem, though, is that he has been consistent, and people are just falling for this rhetoric. Just because you say it enough times that he's all going to be fiscally conservative or whatever, that doesn't make it true. Look at what he's actually done. Look at the amount of money that's been sucked into this state. Upwards of $50 billion spent by this state every 2 years now. And out of that, then that growth, that's not even including the federal funds on top of that. We're talking about another 25 or 30 of federal money that we're spending in an all funds type of a budget. But on top of that, then he has the audacity to propose a $1.5 billion borrowing bill as if $10 billion of debt wasn't enough. We have this fight every 2 years at the legislative session about how are we going to end the session. We have to balance the budget. It's this big struggle to balance the budget. Pay no attention to the $10 or $11 billion of debt sitting over here and the $2 billion in every biennial budget that has to go to pay for that. That's billions of dollars that's going to deficit spending that should be used for priorities that Minnesotans need taken care of now.
What's the expectation in your mind when the Senate releases their plan? I have to imagine the Dayton's probably going to signal pretty quickly, you know, what his intentions are and his feelings are. How much of that do you think is going to be based off of what Dayton wants, and how much of that do you think is going to be based off of what the DFL wants to see happen in all of this?
Well, I think he's in a little bit of a the governor's going to be going a little bit more alone this year than I think he has in the past. You saw it with the vote on the House bill, where you had quite a few Democrats side with the Republicans.
Yeah, 13.
Never mind the rhetoric on the House floor. They took the vote that they needed to take in an election year. So when the Senate bill comes out, it's going to be similar, though different, and I think do a little bit more individual tax relief, as Senator Gazelka said. But I think he's going to have a little bit of a struggle not being left out on an island here, because first and foremost, we want to conform to make tax filing easy so it doesn't cause either the department or, more importantly, individuals across the state a massive headache. And in the process of doing that, the House and the Senate are going to get actual relief, actual rate reductions to people. The governor's plan, leave aside the provider tax and the unconstitutional grab of corporate overseas profits, his plan just extends this very complicated tax credits and you know, all this pre-tax stuff that federal tax reform tried to do away with to make it simple. He doubles down on it. It's more loopholes, more deductions, more credits here, there, and ever to try to pick winners and losers within the tax code rather than just reduce the rate for everybody.
That is Jason Flores from Americans for Prosperity. We'll be back with more right after this.
Justice and Drew, like a good neighbor, but actually fun to have around. Twin Cities News Talk, AM 1130 and 103.5 FM.
I'm Chris Addison. Here's a look at the roads being brought to you by unbound.org. Got a few crashes out there on the system. One coming in right now, eastbound 94, just east of Highway 241. Looks like this one is taken.